Finance Committee substitute is in your packets dated 4/13/83. That incorporates Senator Josephson's amendment, 151 new proposed committee substitute, plus there's a new fiscal note that has been sent from the Division of Elections in your packets also. Yesterday, there were some discussions that Senator Josephson had on portion, and I think Senator Fisher had some comments he wanted to make. The bill is before you.
Mr. Chairman, do we have anyone to testify?
Nobody has signed up to testify or anything.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, may I?
Commissioner, you may.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to present testimony. I'd like to call on an Assistant Attorney General to join me, if I may.
Certainly.
Thank you.
For the record, identify yourself.
I'm Richard Lyon, Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development. With me is Jonathan Rubini, Assistant Attorney General. Apologize for failing to sign up, Mr. Chairman. We've worked inside the administration on Senate Bill 151 and had several meetings yesterday, including a meeting with Mr. Art Gesinger of NANA. The administration doesn't oppose Senate Bill 151. I think your resources committee has done a lot of work to amend that to deal with some of our concerns. We wanted to let you know, however, we have some residual feeling I'll ask Mr. Rubini to address, but the administration is working concurrently on a proposed legislation for the ADA alternative, so that we're examining the question of ADA to see whether ADA's legislation can be changed to allow it to fulfill the need addressed by Senate Bill 151. We don't have legislation for you, but we wanted to let you know that we are working on that. Mr. Rubin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to just make two very quick points. One is to echo some comments that Senator Fisher offered yesterday, and that is the Attorney General's office is also confused as to what label to attach to these entities that we're creating through 151. We agree that they are probably constitutional and that the legislature has authority to create limited purpose political subdivisions in the unorganized borough. We probably would disagree with proponents of the legislation that these entities do not have enough attributes of a governmental entity to be subject to the Article 10 prohibition. But notwithstanding that, they would likely be viewed as constitutional as limited purpose political subdivisions, something like an REAA. Second and probably more important point is that Article 10 also provides that the legislature shall provide for services in the unorganized borough. And the implication of that may be, and we have no case authority and we've searched, is that there is an argument that can be made that the legislature would have a constitutional obligation to stand behind bonds issued to support essential governmental services. And I add that that's regardless of what entity issues these bonds. So if the entity is a 151 entity or an ADA alternative, to the extent that they're providing and the bonds are necessary to provide for essential governmental services, which some of these projects might be viewed as, the argument would be that the legislature would have constitutional obligations to support those bonds in the event of a default.
Senator Johnson.
You raise an interesting point when you mention REAA, is because I want to utter the unspeakable. I thought there was a constitutional provision that said that all local governments would be boroughs or cities. Is there a state constitutional provision which we are stretching either in the REAA legislation or in the legislation?
You're correct. Section 2 of Article 10, I believe, provides that all local government shall be in the forms of cities and boroughs. However, Section 6 allows the legislature to create limited purpose political subdivisions in the unorganized borough, something akin to service areas that boroughs are allowed to establish. And that would be the constitutional footing of these entities, we believe. That's not to say that they're not subject to a legal question. There's no case authority here. Someone can make the argument that these are impermissible governmental entities. And that's precisely the reason why we're proposing an alternative, which is the ADA approach, which would avoid that very question.
Go ahead.
But does your ADA alternative provide the same safeguards to the people in the locality? Because under this bill, they would hold the election, they would elect the supervisor authority, they would decide in the last analysis, as I understand, whether to have the authority or not.
That's something we're working on, sir. Presently, we've provided two means of an element of local control through the ADA alternative. First would be to establish advisory councils in areas congruent to the Department of Labor statistical research areas in the state. Any proposal that ADA would address would be subject to the approval of these advisory councils. And also, to pick up on an old approach that was used in ADA, if and when the local advisory council approves a project, they would have the option of adding two members to the ADA board, members of these advisory councils who would sit for all purposes on the ADA board in dealing with that project. We're also going to address ways that we can improve elements of local control once the bonding or the financing is completed, so that there would be an element of local control with respect to the maintenance, owning, and operation of whatever facilities are established.
Question? Thank you very much. Senator
Mr.
Fisher?
I have several amendments.
Are those that are passed out called amendment number one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
There's amendment one and followed by two, three, and four. And here's a copy of the proposed amendments to the bill. And this was, these amendments are drawn to the previous version of yesterday's version of 151 ordinance. Are these amendments key to the latest substitute? They are key to the latest substitute, Mr. Chairman. And what I'm trying to do here was to add a finding of collateral to sort of provide backup for the state's potential obligation as just presented by counsel with respect to state backing up such bonds. Would this help us in any way in terms of providing a safety feature by at least requiring that collateral be available?
Senator, to the extent that you avoid instances where the bonds would be in a default situation, we would always be avoiding that question of whether the state would have an obligation to stand behind them as a legal matter rather than just as a practical matter dealing with the financial marketplace. So I would think that requiring a sufficient pledge of collateral independent of the asset being developed would obviously go a long way.
All right. The Fourth Amendment, the fourth page there, deals with the concern that I've had and others have had that we establish an authority and then they come along and start saying, well, we're performing services, and even though the initial intent was not to come in for various operating funds and road maintenance or whatever, that we will then be in a position of being asked to provide operating funds, grants of all sorts and so on. And this is an attempt to limit the direct state funding to organizational purposes and not, you know, be encumbered with requests for backup of bonds and so on. Do you feel that this section would do any good when it came right down to it? I mean, this proposed amendment.
Senator, the ability of one legislature to bind a subsequent legislature is always subject to some question. If in fact the subsequent legislature wanted to provide assets, state monies to these entities, they could do so. They would, of course, have to change the substantive restriction on the manner in which the entities could spend the money.
Because, Mr. Chairman, my understanding from the initiators of this proposal was that they would not propose that there be any state backing for those bonds or that funds be provided for anything other than the initial organizational purposes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Josephson.
I'm not sure this collateral idea is workable, because the only asset of the authority would be the improvement that would be funded through the bond, which would be possibly on the ground and have no market value to a lien holder. And if you build 10 miles of road to go to a certain location, you can't rip it up and take it to Atlanta, Georgia or someplace. So while I think the audit language is really very helpful, I would have some concern that by requiring the new authorities to provide collateral, we really make this a nullity. There's no way they can do that.
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond to that, it would seem to me that one type of collateral could be a pledge by a mining venture of other properties to back up the obligation. Is that not possible?
That would be my understanding. In a practical sense, probably what you're looking towards is a line of credit established through a bank based on independent assets of whatever venture proponents of the proposed facility would like to offer, and that would be the independent collateral.
Assuming that the venture that they have already pledged that those assets for working capital or other startup.
Any further questions?
Yes,
Senator Joseph.
Thank you. You mentioned the AIDA approach, and you also said that you're not opposed to 151. You're not asking that we withhold action until the AIDA approach is complete, are you?
That's correct. We're not asking that you withhold those action.
Okay, and then finally, would your AIDA approach, you talked about the advisory council, participation of local people, and so forth, but would there also be a mechanism whereby the locality could decide if or not it wanted the development bond would be for?
You mean as like a local, a borough or a municipality?
No, in the unorganized borough, this bill has a mechanism, as I understand it, for the voter to decide if they want to have an authority at all. And I heard council say that under the AIDA approach, decisions as to there would be representation on the AIDA board, and there would be an advisory council as the program went forward. But what I want to know is whether there would be an opportunity for the voters to say to AIDA, stay out of it. We like it the way it is, and we don't want to have you.
Senator Josephson, two responses. The first is that in the present form of the AIDA alternative draft, the local advisory council has an effective veto right over any proposed development. To the extent that the administration, the legislature sees fit to require additional local control, the provision can be made for a local election as to each particular bond issue even. One can provide for local control as much as one wants through the AIDA approach using a centralized financial bonding center.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did anyone else want to testify? Senator Fisher?
Mr. Chairman, I'd very much appreciate Don Argensen looking at the proposed amendments. And by the way, I will withdraw proposed amendment number 3. If Don would look at those, I would like to have his opinion.
Mr. Argensen?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Mr. Argensinger, would you identify yourself?
I'm Don Argensinger, Vice President of NANA Corporation.
Mr. Chairman, Don, do you see any problem with the proposed amendments 1, 2, and 3? The 1, 2, and 4?
No, I don't see any problem with amendment number 4. make amendment number two. As I understand the way the amendment is drafted, I think it would require a judgment to be made at this point as to whether or not it might be appropriate sometime in the future to grant authorities funds to carry out the purposes for which they're set up. I'm not sure that the legislature wants to make that judgment at this point in time. As I understand the way this is drafted, that's one of the things it would do, in addition saying that you could not use direct appropriations to satisfy the bondholders.
As the representative of the, Mr. Chairman, as the representative of the Attorney General's office pointed out, it's probably more of a statement of intent than anything else, as he said, it wouldn't bind any future legislature. But, Mr. Chairman, Don, in terms of the intent of the authority that is being proposed in connection with the Red Dog Venture, do you have in mind, does Nan and does Kaminko, several of you jointly have in mind that you would be coming to the state and asking for support and repayment of the bonds?
No. We're talking about obtaining the ability to sell revenue bonds, which would be retired by the project. And we're not contemplating coming to the state to ask for appropriations that would be used to retire those bonds.
Do you see any circumstances under which you would come to the state asking for help?
Well, I think that it's conceivable that an authority that might be set up in the Nana region or perhaps in some other area of the state could develop projects that serve broad public purposes. In other words, they're not, the total use of those facilities, for example, a port facility, would not be entirely restricted to the mining venture, but rather it may be used for that as well as serving the needs of the people in that region. I think under those circumstances that it may be appropriate to look at those facilities in perhaps a different way than just a narrow purpose facility. So for that reason, I'm not so sure that you'd want to forever preclude the ability to provide that kind of facility with some direct assistance.
Mr. Chairman, I've been ready to support this legislation. I may be talked out of it because I don't want to see us establishing an instrumentality here that is going to absorb money for a variety of potential purposes. I saw this as a very limited economic development oriented authority that would facilitate establishment of, in this case, a major mining venture, which I very strongly support. But this, to me, again, would be encroaching on the whole issue of constitutional aspects of establishing this creature. And anyway, Mr. Chairman, Don, what about amendment number one? Pledge of collateral.
Having the benefit of legal review, I believe that there's no problem with that amendment.
Thank you very much.
Senator Bennett?
Just to look at the answer question for me, should these amendments be adopted, what would happen if someone in a remote area decided to put a road down to a dock or airport or anything of that nature? Would this preclude the state participating, or the state being, the legislature being involved in issuing money? I'm a little bit concerned then that when you have a mining venture which is proposed to be very profitable, then I guess you'd have a collateral to pledge. So what would happen if it was nothing more than a social need or a necessity for a village to put in something which maybe didn't have a collateral value? A bit concerned that it might tend to preclude the legislature from participating either partially or to some method which would do a social good to the people.
Any comment? Senator Josephson?
I'd like to pursue that a little bit, John. In the first place, with Amendment Number 1, that would mean that the mine owner, for all practical purposes, would have to pledge that collateral to guarantee satisfaction of the bond obligations of the authority. That may not be a problem. I have no idea how valuable the ore is and so forth. But I could also see that they may have made put first liens or on that property for working capital, for equipment, machinery. Are you confident that this is not a problem? Knowing the mechanics of your operation.
I am not totally confident that's not a problem. At first blush, I think in terms of the Red Dog project specifically, and knowing what kind of an ore body that is and so on, that it may not be a problem in that particular instance. With other projects, and if there were other authorities, I think those people would have to answer.
Theoretically, we could have a project that is designed to provide for the processing of whitefish, which are in common ownership until they are harvested. There would be nothing that could be put up as collateral in that instance. So this would make it impossible to have an authority under that line.
Senator Mulcahy?
Mr. Chairman, pursuing along the comments of Senator Bennett, it would concern me that if such an authority put in, be it airports or roads or something, that could serve a good public need for adjacent communities. Let's take the example of an airport, and then this would preclude maybe the state going in there and putting in a building or something for the people to use that airport, and then would necessitate building an adjacent airport out there and duplicating, and I guess that bothers me that.
Senator Fisher, do you care to respond to your amendment?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid I wasn't listening. What I was saying, Vic, is if under this authority projects are put in that would have good public use for adjacent communities, it would seem to me that we shouldn't close off the possibility of using those. I know where you're trying to get, and I have no problem with what you're trying to do, but I think it precludes, say, a community next door of using that airport, putting improvements on that airport that may go beyond just the commercial use of that airport, whether it would be a building for people to wait in while the plane is coming, or improvements along the road, whatever the facility might be, and then would necessitate a total duplication of state dollars next door to serve the same purpose where it's right there, and that's what bothers me about these proposed amendments.
Yeah, proposed amendment number 2.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I can see that point. For instance, if we had a Lost River type development with a dock facility and so on, and had a community right next to it, that there may be community functions that would be appropriate. I'm not sure we'd use this approach, but I think the point is really okay.
Any further questions of Mr. Arnold? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we have the proposed committee substitute, and we have amendments to that. Do you wish to move them, Senator Fisher?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move amendment number one.
Motion has been made to adopt amendment number one. Is there an objection?
Objection.
There is an objection. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, as before, I think it'd be important to provide some kind of pledge of collateral, which could be real estate, financial backup of any kinds, take or pay contracts, or some kind of a basis for issuance of those bonds. And my principal concern is still being that we hold this state revenue, state bonding structure as secure as possible without having inroads made by authorities that might be established for limited purposes.
Further discussion? Senator Josephson?
At the least, I would request that numbered paragraph parenthesis 2 be taken out. I don't have a problem with some collateral being pledged by somebody. I think there could be hardships, but I understand where Senator Fisher, where his concerns lie. And I don't object to a requirement that the project revenues and the analysis be reasonably expected to be adequate for payment of the principal and interest. But I think that what we're going to do is we're going to have a situation in which the benefit of the authority will go to those who can afford to fund their project anyway in large measure. Because if you have enough collateral to put up to guarantee satisfaction of all obligations, you almost don't need the authority, as I see it. And that is that's the thing that I have concern with. I gave in the mining venture, where someone is a private owner and owns the ore, it might be feasible, but in other kinds of economic development, it wouldn't be. So I still retain an objection to that part of the
issue. Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. If I may just respond to that. In the Senate Resources Committee, there was a very strong feeling that we should restrict this as tightly as possible and limit it to ventures that can pay their own way, so that we don't get into a situation where we have a real good case here with Red Dog, but then along comes a more questionable operation, and we say, well, go ahead, we've got this authority gimmick available, and they get us into trouble. That is why a whole series of amendments was put into the bill, was put into the bill, in order to provide that kind of security. And this, in effect, would provide one more assurance of that sort to preclude others from coming in if they don't have a solid footing as Red Dog has. I think that basically, if we could easily pass a special act for Red Dog, that's the course the Resources Committee would have taken.
Further discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, signify by raising your hand. All opposed? Motion failed. Amendment number 2.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Joseph.
I would like to offer all of amendment number 1 up to the word bonds on the third line from the line, delete the comma and the material followed. That would require some collateral, but delete the finding that the pledge of collateral is sufficient to guarantee all bond
obligations. How is that different from? How is that different from the second part, the first part?
Well, in addition to the bond committee having a description of the bond issue, a feasibility analysis independently made, there would also have to be a pledge of a collateral in some unspecified amount. They would also have to have a finding that the project revenues could retire the payment of the principal and interest. I think that would be done in any event. I see what you're saying. You're saying this is in the your amendment, Senator. The underlying portion is the new material, is that right? I'm sorry. Well, that it would only add that there could be a pledge of collateral, but delete the test that the pledge be sufficient to guarantee satisfaction of the obligation.
And you think a pledge of collateral is different than a pledge of collateral sufficient to guarantee satisfaction?
I think that the bond committee might regard as a test of good faith the willingness of the developer to put up some asset, some specifically pledged asset, as an element of the whole package. But what I wanted to avoid was that that pledge equal in value all the bond obligations.
I guess my concern is I don't personally know what the restrictions or non-restrictions are regarding revenue bonds. The only familiarity I have is with revenue bonds that we sold at universities for campus, civic centers and things of that sort. And I don't know where they have pledges of collateral in situations like that or where it's guaranteed. Does anybody know? Or where it's required? Whether if you have a pledge of collateral, that by virtue of that requirement obviates the need for revenue bonds.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that is an issue here because revenue bonds are bonds in a category versus general obligation bonds. General obligation bonds are the obligation of an established government, and revenue bonds are not, in effect, a lien upon the government. But they can, backup for revenue bonds
is the revenue.
Can be in any form whatsoever.
No, it's the revenue derived from that specific thing that you're constructing.
Well,
that's the connection.
And from anything else, any other revenues that might be pledged to it, which could be real property or any other kind of backup.
Like I said, my familiarity is not that great, but in the situation of student centers at universities, the reason that you give revenue bonds is that you derive revenues from those students which pay off that bond. They're specifically guaranteed by that revenue, and that's the reason why they're called revenue bonds. And whether or not they're, if you put further restrictions on there in terms of collateral requirements, whether or not that changes the whole concept and makes it into another category and would restrict the definition of revenue bonds, I don't know.
I will draw my motion.
Motion withdrawn. Amendment number 2, Senator Fisher.
No, I won't bother.
Amendment number 3.
No.
Number 4, I'm sorry.
Number 4 is the kind of provision we have for most instrumentalities that are established. If the committee doesn't wish to bother with it, I will not move it, Mr. Chairman.
Pardon?
I don't think I'll move it.
I will.
If the committee has any problems with it.
I'll move it.
No problem.
Is there any objection? Without objection, amendment number 4 is adopted. Okay, incorporating that into the Finance Committee substitute, is there any more discussion? And you have the recommendations that Senator Josephson made yesterday.
Mr. Chairman, there's no further discussion, so I'd make a motion to move the bill out of individual recommendations.
You've heard the motion. Without objection, so ordered. Yesterday we left off in the Department of Administration on their specific closeout.
Yeah, that's
okay, fine.
please read that again.
We are on page 118, Senator Thacker.
Oh, yesterday, Emma, when I said I didn't want to broadcast, that was like, my fuck is she doing?
I knew the door was closed, but
yeah.
No, I have no idea.
Nobody knows how it's going to work.
Well, how come it showed 1.6 million in there?
What they're going to do is get us to build the harbor.
Well, public service is not up there. How come it was 240 before?
They plan to come in and prepare a proposal to the next legislature to build the harbor.
Really? Is that right?
That's fine.
Explain that? That doesn't make sense.
They say that they can.
You don't, okay.
Okay, why did they leave 600? What that doesn't equate with, but then we'll get to it when we get to it. The state aid, what page did we leave off on? 118? Okay, page 118, Senator Ferguson.
Yes, we left out page 118, and this is employee housing. On travel, we allow FY83 amount less 10%, contractual commodities, great inflation amount, and equipment allow 50% replacement equipment. We come in with the figure 14552.
Okay.
On page 122. This is risk management. No, loss retention risk management. Mr. Chairman, what we're saying here is that $10 million not be funded in this category. I'd like for Mike to give the background on this.
Mike?
Yeah, the rationale for the reduction is that the risk management pool of about $16 million set aside for putting against the state. They put there because it's in our extraordinary code, that's what they ought to do. And what we're saying is that let's not put in this revolving loan fund, the revolving fund essentially what it is, and we're saying we don't need to put in, additional $10 million into that fund until such time we know that the fund that's there already is depleted. And if we do have some sort of catastrophe or some loss to the state in excess of what the fund is, they can come in for a supplemental and give the, and again, it's really a cost saving measure because of the revenue picture. We don't see setting aside an additional $10 million for that purpose as being needed as something else, but simply that if they do in fact need to have that additional $10 million for some loss that occurs 2 years from now, that in fact they can ask for a supplemental. This is suggesting let them collect all of the premiums that they have in each of the individual agency budgets, the $14 million, but only offer them to spend the $4 million. And it's sort of a similar situation as we're doing with that department.
Are there any questions? Okay, just for some further backup information, yesterday I called Ron Lear, who last year, a couple of years ago, was
Director of Budget Management about this, because we've gone over this a number of times every year. And to date, they have approximately $17 million in their reserve account. He indicated that what they really do need here is a revolving account. It's not a revolving account. What they do is that they've encumbered these monies every year instead of lapsing them, and so they have quite a buildup of a fund there. I think the encumbrances are illegal, but they've done it anyway, and the money is sitting there. In any event, you look back to fiscal year 82, the actual amount of payments there was about $5.1 million. He indicates that approximately half go into comp payments and things of this nature, and half goes back into self-insurance. Self-insurance of the program. And I agree with the subcommittee on this, that we don't need an additional $14 million in here with the $17 million already sitting there. That with the $17 million and the four left there, they have more than sufficient funds to take care of their problems. Far more than sufficient funds. And in the meantime, until next year, I wish that the administration would look at the creation possibly of a revolving account here, rather than encumbering lapses that you really shouldn't be doing. Senator Joseph?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Page 124. We just like to show the figures minus 10 million plus 10 plus 10 million for even accounting, so it shows on our BRU on page 124. We put we're general fund minus 10 million and program receipts 10 million.
Okay.
On page 126, operation risk management, what we've done is personal service, delete funds for nine positions, travel, reduce travel funds by 75%, and contractual delete inflation amount, and reduce communication expenses by 75%. Commodities, delete replacement amount. Equipment, reduce replacement equipment by 50%. And come up with figure 176.8. And Mike, if anybody has a question, has a background.
In addition, did you receive it yesterday? I had 8 copies of an audit which was recently performed by budget and audit on a specific one. We're looking for it right now. I thought I'd pass it on to staff tonight. It was an audit done by legislative budget and audit. And you can look at the specifics of the audit, but it's very poor performance in this specific area.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have.
Okay,
he's looking for a factor right now.
Let's keep going on. We'll find it.
Page 128, we just disregarded this page.
Okay. Prior to leaving this department, administration, I've asked, since they don't have an opportunity in free conference to make any changes, I've asked the administration to comment on each department when we get done with it. So at this time, Gene, if you have any comments, please make them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, first of all, a response to one of the questions that came up yesterday, and then I believe comments on three of the items that have been discussed. There was some question yesterday as to why have two separate components, one for the Labor Relations Agency and a separate personnel. The response back from DOA was that
they're trying to keep the Labor Relations State Board a separate component because its role is to mediate between employees and the state. The DOA does not want to fund the board in the division because it might reduce the effectiveness of the board. The three items that we have some concern on are the telecommunications systems, leasing and facilities, and the risk management premiums and loss retention. On the telecommunications system.
Could you identify the page, please?
Don't have your material, so.
Okay.
It's the one that the administration had recommended $9,966,000, and I believe it's reduced to $3,000.
On future computer printout, make sure they have a copy of it.
It would be appreciated.
Okay, it's on page 71, 72 area.
Okay. Estimates that it, probably about $429,000 should be added back into the budget to for that.
$429,000? $429,000. To the $9,300,000?
Yes.
And that's based specifically on tariff rates?
What do they anticipate the Alaskan tariff rates to be for transponder time as well as for the state troopers' weather line?
Okay, discussion on that? Is there any questions? Oh, page 70.
70.
Did you guys have an opportunity to look at that?
You know, it was just trying to remember exactly how much of that total is really for the transponder time.
I forget the exact total, but it's quite a bit for the two birds. Okay.
The figure that you're giving is the $429,000. Is that specifically for just the rate increase, or is that
based
what
on the information?
For?
Based for, well, that's your best estimate of what the tariff rate will be 1 year from now.
Okay. Do you have any recommendation?
Well, he's looking at all the backup on it.
We're on telecommunications, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, the department seems to be estimating the figure 429 in an effort to compromise with them. I'd go with 215. Allow them to take about half of that back.
Okay.
Okay, is there an objection to 215 addition? 9,529.6? And if you're tight on there, you can, you have $2,250,000 you can move around for personal services.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go on to the next one. What's their next concern?
The next one for is in the area of leasing and facilities. I have a question here. What was the amount being recommended by the committee?
Whatever you had, I think, was what it was. We'll find out. It's way back.
Page 117. No.
Okay. Okay, it goes from 22,315,000 authorized last year to 24,916.
24?
24,916.9.
Okay, the comparison, they requested a figure of 36 million?
No, they requested a figure of 26 million. I thought you said 36.
No, 36, maybe we can see.
36 is
the
total, but here is
the 36. Oh, okay, then, oh, okay. Yeah. 34 million 9, then down below, or 36 million 3.
Is that a question, Mr. Chairman? Is that basically a no inflationary increase for leases? Okay, some of the contracts, which go on for a few more years, have a built-in inflationary adjustment. I know you have a statement of intent that it is the intent of the legislature that lease space expenditures not increase during FY84 except for already negotiated contracts which allow for an inflationary adjustment. But my question is, does the 24.9 figure allow for those negotiated contracts with inflationary increases?
Okay, as we understand, your budget is a 6% increase in that lineup, and the escalator clauses that are in the contracts don't state a specific percentage, but rather say it's tied to like CPI anchors. CPI anchors at this point is 3.9, so automatically we take it down to 3.9. And then we saw a move from K from here that the agency was able to do during the interim, and that it basically equaled about 3.94% of their budgetary. Well, they could make the move to Frontier with that kind of gap there, plus the what the inflation was originally budgeted in, that this figure they could move up.
Okay, so it is my understanding that the inflation has not been completely eliminated. You are still allowing by a 3.some-odd% increase?
No, incorrect. What we said was, our logic was 3.9% is what CPI is. Take 4% of the remainder of that contractual item for leases, and that essentially equals the difference between what you had already budgeted for leasing and that added with the Frontier building. In other words, you were able to pull together funds for the Frontier building during the interim, and it was felt that the agency had that much room to pick up that amount of money that with this increase from 82, 83 authorized, we should be able to do that.
If you have that much, in other words, if you have that much ability to pull funds, you know, to add on, I don't know how many dollars it is, a square foot increase, that you should be able to make a 3.9% difference.
My concern in that area, Mr. Chairman, would be that in deducting or reducing some of the travel in the other areas, the other contractual services in the budget, that we may have, and I'm not sure, I think the department needs to analyze this one, may have eliminated some of the excess funding, you might say, that they've had in the past. I think the department has some concern in this one. We were able to get a good figure.
Okay. I'll tell you what, let's leave this open. I don't think it's the intent of the Senate at all to arbitrarily hurt you in any way. But go back, take a look at those leases, see what they say specifically, see how much of a CPI you have, or how much of an increase you have to give, specific dollar amount. And there shouldn't be that many of them. You don't have that many places leased, 20, 30, in that category. But I think also, if there are any anticipated moves that you had requested from FY 83 to FY 84, you better stop them.
I think our primary concern is with existing facilities, not new.
Yeah, that's, and I think our concern is that if it's a legitimate increase, we'll fund it. But not to the extent where we've seen a proliferation of brand new offices lately.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll have the department research.
Senator Joseph?
Well, it's kind of moot because it all happened before Mr. Dusick and his colleagues.
Oh, I'm not blaming
came in. No, I know, but I just as an Anchorage legislator and former assembly member, I thought that the move to the Frontier Building was an outrage. I just want to register that because it was terribly costly because the ostensible problem in the McKay Building could have been solved for a nominal amount of money.
Okay. But take a look at it and where it's legitimate, we'll
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. The final area has to do with risk management of premiums, loss retention account. That was discussed both yesterday and today. The $14.2 million figure being requested by the administration is really divided into two components. One is to pay premiums, and the rest is to go into the reserve account, which was discussed. Based on information from the Department of Administration, the amount for premiums alone would be $6.9 million in FY 84.
Right.
And I believe the total funding, if I understand it correctly, is $4 million.
You also have $17.1 million in reserve, in addition to this $4 million.
The amount...
It was arguing that you could make the premium payments and pay off whatever payments obligations you have, and you have the full faith and credit of the state behind you if you need additional funds over and above the 17 plus 4, which would be 4.2321, 21.4 million.
The amount in reserve, 15 or 17 million, whichever the case might be, I have two figures here, is part of a $20 million figure, which an actuary had estimated is required for known losses. Some of these known losses are various workers' comp claims. The JAL 747 that was blown off the runway in Anchorage, what was that? That was, what, 78 or 79? I guess the case is still pending. So based on known losses, it was estimated that $20 million is required.
Plus you have the rainy day coming too.
Mr. Chairman, well, when you say, I don't know what you mean by known losses, are those known liabilities of the state, adjudged liabilities, or losses? There could be a $5 million airplane blown off the runway, and there could be two or three tortfeasors who would share the liability. It might not be all of our liability. Or there might be comparative negligence that would reduce the amount that the claimant could assert against the state.
Right, for example, in JL, what I believe was 80-20 was the initial... I forgot who had 80%, who had a 20% at this point. But it was the state's portion for the initial.
So when you use the term known losses, you're talking about either settlements or judgments for specific amounts.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Josephson, I'm afraid I don't have... I was hoping that someone from Deputy Commissioner Stack was here because he's very familiar with it, but I don't see him. These are mostly still in litigation, and I believe it is not necessarily known losses, but estimate of what our liability would probably be, or maybe.
Chairman, we recently appropriated $30 million plus for a Union Oil Company judgment after the fact. There were some interest charges which were unpleasant for us, but we didn't create a reserve for that kind of civil litigation. Why can't we deal with judgments like you're talking about if there's a shortfall as and when the judgments are rendered?
I suppose we could. Maybe with a possible exception of our self-insurance for workers' comp. We have a self-insurance certificate as far as the workers' comp goes, and for that one, I believe we are required to maintain some sort of reserve. Yeah.
Right.
For the other ones, the JL airliner blowing off, it's probably not required.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
One more thing. Isn't there a procedure for the legislature to act any way when judgments are rendered against the state? I thought that seems to me I had a client with a judge who once, and we had to await a legislative process to fund that judgment in a civil case.
Could have been for additional funding?
It was a civil dispute. Isn't there an annual review or submission by the Department of Law of judgments to be funded?
I'm not familiar with it.
Well,
I can research it for you.
Staff and Senator Bennett say that there is.
We have that.
Before it can be paid, or is it a report after the fact?
Before it can be paid.
Senator Page?
Senator Josephson was going through my line of questioning. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead,
just a comment on the civil suit with the oil companies. We're given figures of approximately $37 million, and the legislature forthwith got the appropriation through, but it's my understanding that we in fact appropriated $1.75 million too much. And in fact, we weren't losing $10,000 a day, and we were making $25,000 a day.
It's more money for child care.
Mr. Chairman, I believe on that one, it was costing us 10.5% interest, and we were,
at that point,
I think, accruing about 8 or 8.5% interest. But the total amount still had to get appropriated, because that is the amount going to the oil companies. True, part of that was offset by additional interest revenues coming into the state, which helped pay for that appropriation.
Mr. Chairman, I just find it confusing that in this area that we have a risk management fund that is based upon apparent estimates, and we also come back through the appropriation process when there's a sum certain to pay. I think you can see the dilemma.
I think, Mr. Chairman, Senator Josephson, there's really a basic difference between the self-insurance fund, which we have, rather than having, say, liability insurance for a plane blowing off the runway. I'm disregarding workers' comp for the moment. And other type of action, such as that oil suit that was brought by Union Marathon, which normally would a company, a private enterprise, would they normally have insurance for such things like that, where they would for normal liability purposes. There may be a difference between the two types of programs. Because instead of having a self-insurance program, we could have purchase policies for the entire liability, in which case it would be an annual expense.
Does this have an effect on the way the state deals with claimants? In other words, is there a greater tendency to pay a claimant when there is fund available in the risk management pool than there would be if you have to present the facts to the legislature for approval? I'm just thinking in terms of the bargaining process, whether there are any implications like that.
I personally have no knowledge of that.
You mean by having it available? Their claim is that that's one of the reasons that they want to approve, is that it helps them. But on the other hand, the other side of that argument is that you have the whole state behind you to begin with, and there's really just having it in a specific pool. I don't think when you look at the state government. Who are the underwriters?
I was supposed to have gotten a list for the $6.9 million premiums we were paying.
Did we ever get a list?
We were supposed to have gotten a list, but I never did receive it. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Would it be Marsh McClellan and Corinne Black Dawson?
Yes.
Because that's what it says in the audit.
Okay, I didn't read that.
Top of page 3.
Mm-hmm. Just for the information of the committee, in FY81, the actual cost in this was $5,536.8. Last year was $5,106.9. Last year also, you'll note on the next page that we took $5 million out of this. This was with the recommendation of the administration then. And the pool at that point in time was about $10 million, I think. $10 or $12 million, and we took $5 million then because it was just getting totally out of reason, and even Ron Lear and them agreed that it was too much. So I really do think that bringing it down to $4 million with the 17.1 you have available is more than sufficient to take care of all your premiums plus losses and still leave a reasonable reserve there.
Would it be possible for me to get back, hold this one open to see if there really is any problem from a legal standpoint as far as our liabilities for keeping this?
Yeah, and if there are legal problems, bring all that as backup material.
Will do. That's the only items that I have.
Okay. Any further questions on revenue? We'll go on to the next one. Administration, we're going to revenue, right? Oh, you want to go into the... One moment, I'm sorry. Let's go back and do it right now.
It's a capital idea.
Okay. Do you have page number? Back to administration, Public Broadcasting Commission. I apologize for yesterday when I said there wasn't a request. There was one, and it was in addition to mine. I didn't have one. I'm not going to present mine.
Page 52.
Do you remember those pages? Or?
Page 50.
50, 52.
Call the meeting back to order. Senator Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The pass out here, what you see is Alaska Review has normally been found in the governor's budget. However, it was omitted this time. I'd move that we include $100,000 for the continuation of Alaska Review, the Independent Public Television, Inc.
Is there an objection? Without objection, so ordered. Okay, back to Department of Revenue. Senator Ferguson, you have the...
Yes. Page 2. Alcohol and Beverage Control Board. What we did in travel was reduced to FY83, authorized less 10%. Contractual commodities didn't disallow inflation, and came up with a figure of 651.3. Page 6, municipal assessments, we came in with the governor's figure of 70.0500.10, excuse me.
What percentage of this, so that we don't have the same hassle of the supplementals and things last year, I'm asking just an information question. What percentage of this is what they got or didn't get, or how does this relate to past history?
I'd have to ask Mike.
Yeah, you'll notice on your budget sheet, there was one of your outside, it's 71.3, and
is that before or after that supplemental?
Before.
Okay.
And so this is actually the governor's request, and so they factored, you know, basically corporate income tax and what's being shared back, so there's that put in, and there's some downward projection in this. but essentially it would be about the same position next year where we are this year.
Okay, but it is definitely a decrease. The message should be this is a decrease from what they've been getting.
Simply because, yes.
Sure, because the revenue's
yes,
gone.
Absolutely.
And that it's not the intent of the legislature to promise any supplementals the next go around.
No.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Josephson?
Thank you. On the same point, then this figure represents, I'm being redundant, I'm afraid, a calculation based on the anticipated revenues from that tax account.
Yes.
Now, the tax account, there were some changes in law, weren't there, within the last that reduced the amount in the account.
Yes. Right.
And the claim of the municipalities was that they were the stepchildren of that,
yes,
of that change.
Right, that was the banquet bill. Blame somebody that's not here. Okay.
Page 8, on amusement and game taxes, we took the governor's figure.
Okay.
Page 10, aviation fuel tax, we took the governor's figure. Page 12, electric and telephone co-op tax, we took the governor's figure.
Yeah, no.
On page 14, liquor license tax, we took the governor's figure. On page 16, fishery tax, we took the request figure because the figure of 7858.0 seemed to be arbitrary, and the fisheries got a small increase in fish prices this year, so we figured this should be the amount of 10750.0.
Any objection?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Does this tax sharing entail only the taxes actually collected, or is it the appropriated amount?
It's the amount that's actually appropriated up to the appropriated amount. Actually, taken in up to the appropriate amount.
Thank you.
Yes, and on some of them, there is by statute the percentage of what is collected must go back to the shared tax distribution to the
county. I'm trying to go through you right now.
Thank you.
On page 20, Municipal Bond Bank Authority, what we did in travel, reduce FY83 authorized less than 10% contractual and equipment disallow, well, contractual disallow inflation and equipment allow 50% of inflation costs. Our figure is 371.5.
Okay. Just for your information, Senator, that's AS4375130 on fishery taxation. It says 50% of the revenue collected from fish buyers and processors within an organized city or borough must be shared with us in the same city.
Thank you.
On page 24, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, what we did was personal service, delete new positions and related costs, travel, commodities, well, travel, we didn't do it.
Yeah, we did.
We did?
Mm-hmm.
Reduced travel, contractual commodities, and we came up with a figure of 2945.7. Page 28, the Permanent Fund Corporation, personal services, increased personal services by 57 cents, reduced travel by 29.8, reduced contractual 929, reduced equipment 40,000, came up with
May we stand these questions? Mm-hmm.
That was the governor's amendment.
Yeah, it was the governor's amendment. I also want to recommend a change.
What was the governor's? What is it? Imagine it's a new
what
person.
He was reading off was the governor's amendment right. Versus governor, right? Senate versus Gossett.
Right. They took the governor's amendment,
yeah.
Which increased the personal services by 57.6. So that must be a body, right?
Yeah. They had another new person.
Yeah, I was
you know, right now they have the executive director, administrative assistant, comptroller, investment officer 3, investment officer 2, accounting technician 3, secretary 3, secretary 2, accounting technician 2, special assistant to the corporation, assistant to the trustees, assistant to the trustees.
So what did they add?
That last one? It doesn't show in here. That would be in the governor's amendment, which I wouldn't have.
No, we didn't show any increase in staff, although it was a substantial one over last year. It was a result of basically the corporations had not defended the case, and they were maturing, and they were going to a new phase, needed an executive director, and all these things at the time for the people that were listening to the staff. So the program
that's what bothers me, because the program receipts are the interest that's being earned off there, and if they have less expenditures, then maybe we'll get more interest.
Just one more time, do we know what the 57.6 is? If it's not a new person, then why is personal services increasing again? Do we know that?
The only thing I can determine in the backup is, do you know? Okay, the only thing I can determine here is that they have a continuation request of 470.
Right.
And that's taken out from all the existing positions, and they must have added on this assistant to the trustees. I think it wouldn't be for that much. No, but they did.
Are they filling in the vacancy?
Let's
see, one thing that they might have done too is that to say the 470 was incorrect, taking the fact that we were up to 563. Okay. To get to the 470, they had taken a vacancy factor of 16.4%. And in the governor's amended, they reduced their vacancy factor and increased it to 528, the same number of people.
Thank you.
Do we need this?
I have a recommendation, one recommended change on your figure, and that's under contractual, to reduce that to $1,475,000. The reason for that is that in their backup, they had, and again, there's very little explanation here. At one point in time, they had professional fees of $2 million. That was reduced by the governor by $1 million. But in their printing, and the safekeeping, reporting, and accounting fees, and in the witness fees, and in the general consulting, they have legal fees of $20,000, general consulting of $75,000. It just seemed to me to be a little excessive in the amounts that they were using. I still think $1,004,000 is a lot.
Make a motion.
I'll make a motion. Is there an objection?
The reduction will be noted in the next page. Page 32, travel reduced to FY83, authorized less 10% contractual and commodities. Just allow inflation and equipment, allow one half replacement equipment. Came up with the figure 2860.7. Under petroleum revenue, 34, page 34. Travel reduced to FY83, authorized less than 10% commodities and contractual, disallowed inflation, equipment to allow 50% of replacement cost, came up with figure 1775.5. Enforcement revenue operations, page 36. Travel reduced FY, authorized less current fund travel, less 10%. Contractual commodities disallow inflation, came to a figure of 1230.3. Under treasury management, personnel service, delete new position request from the governor's amended budget, travel reduced to FY83, less 10% contractual, disallow new position contractual, disallow inflation and commodities, disallow new position commodities, disallow inflation and equipment, disallow new position equipment. In the figure of 2112.3. Under revenue operation public service, page 40. Travel reduced to FY83, less prune fund travel, less 10%.
Okay.
Could I hold on?
I'd like to leave this open too for the following reason. There's nowhere in this budget that you've appropriated, there's funds appropriated for administration of the permanent fund program dividend. If we're going to have it, then we have to have money that's going to be used for administration. The governor took it out entirely. But in taking it out, you'll notice on this specific DRU that in FY82 they had $214,200 for public service. Well, with the addition of the permanent fund administration, it went up to $2,000,004. With taking it out, it comes back down to $1,000,005. And I don't know what's happening there, so.
Every time the subcommittee, they just said, we did ask that, they said we're providing things. We still have to look at the permanent fund dividend application. We're still doing reviewing there. Plus, our counter has sufficient counter help that we're still being passed to do there. And I have a hunch that it means that they move in the response until such time that they have to hear everything from the program.
Could we, for this time, leave this open and then I'll look into that whole thing?
Child support enforcement. What we did was take the governor's figures, but I have a request for a legislative add-on, and that'd be add 7 new positions, and the funding source would be federal receipts of 239.5, general fund match be 112.6 for total increases in the
is there a
total fund request of 352.1?
352.1?
352.1.
What's with you?
Big Rick?
child support. How about if we increase it and use it from program receipts instead of using the general fund to pay for this, instead of the state having to pay these people to go out and get this, put the strong arm on people, have it paid from the people that supposedly they're going after?
In fact, that's the argument for the position, that they will increase collections to the...
Yeah, well, to the family, but nothing to the state.
No, I think the argument, and I yield to Senator Fisher on this, but I think the argument is that the state assumes responsibility for these dependents when the parent is not paying the child.
Right. We either pay it in this BRU or in Health and Social Services.
Exactly. So by...
So I'm saying pay the program receipts here, that way we don't have to pay it in Social Services or here in general fund.
I think the question would be, if I understand the comment, whether the parents... The extraction of the money from the parent ought to go to the state or the dependent, because if we don't collect the money here, we will experience the problem in the HES budget. And so it was thought to be more equitable in the state interest, as well as the interest of the particular dependents involved, to increase support efforts here.
Well, it would be for both if we increased it by making them pay their alimony and whatever child support here, and at the same time we charge those delinquent people for the service that the state is having to go out there and strong arm them. And we put it back in the program receipts here rather than use general fund monies for the specific service. You see what I'm getting at? I don't like the program to begin with. But if it has to be done, why in the hell can't they pay for it themselves?
Well, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this program is heavily supported by the federal government. 70% of the funds come from the feds. And before we would do anything like this, I would think we need to check and make sure that that could be done under the federal regulations covering the federal share.
That's good. And if we have so much of federal government, maybe we have more monies coming in, we could just increase the federal share by 352.
Would that be nice?
I don't know. I just don't know. Yeah.
We'll check it out.
Okay, sure. Go ahead, Senator.
My only question is, if this is in fact true, does that mean then we can cut the HES budget, this amount of money, which this is going to save the HES budget? I see us using the debate that we're going to save the HES budget, so we should do this. Now, am I going to see the same people come in and remove an amount of money from the HES budget that would remain to this discussion?
You'll see.
You'll see
me in 1984 being very happy to take a look at that and see how the experience went. Because I'm a reasonable man.
Let's go on to the next page.
Mr. Chairman, need some...
Yeah, go ahead.
Did we approve the...
No, we're going to look at it.
You know what we need?
Yes, the Genesee furnace is
can be used. Also, to see if there's any possibility of getting more federal funds.
And so, with this proportion of one of the things, Chairman, I might request, we get the information as to how the program is built up in the past 4 years, where it was 4 years ago, and how it's built up. I don't think necessarily just throwing people at money solves the problem.
Office of the Commissioner.
Mel.
It's open.
I can only give you sort of an anecdotal comment that time and time again, I have seen cases where child support is ordered by the court, I think we all have, and where usually the father ignores the order. And that just breeds disrespect for the court system and creates great social problems. They don't mind visiting the children, but they do mind paying for them.
I fully concur with my Chairman. The problem often happens, though, that once a person has a judgment against them, if they're unemployed, they don't have the money, or what have you, it drives them to do several things. It's not really disrespecting the court, but you can't get blood out of a turnip.
No.
And likewise, it often drives people to leave the state or to get out of the jurisdiction of the court because they can't pay it.
Senator, that's why you're right, and that's why it's important to to get on top of it before they accrue a lot of unpaid installments where they're hopelessly behind. It's like any other collection problem, that you have to keep them current. Otherwise, once they lapse, they have no incentive to try to get out of the hole.
Yeah, I guess the balance I'm seeking is I want maximum collections, but I don't want this to be agency to be used as a stick, as a punishment, which sometimes these type of agencies do.
Look for more federal funds.
Page 46, Office of Commissioner. Travel reduced to FY83, authorized less than 10% to contractual commodities to allow inflation, equipment to allow one half replacement equipment. Coming with the figure 1564.6.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, what we did in department law on that special litigation cost of $11 million, that 337.1 you see is the other portion of that. So what I would propose we take it out here consistent with those and not put it in a special legislation.
So the figure of 337.1 under miscellaneous should be deleted from that. Administration services, page 48, on personnel, delete new position, travel reduced to FY83, authorized less 10%. Contractual commodities, disallow inflation, equipment allow 1/2 replacement equipment. Coming with the figure 2563.6.
On page 52, if we're going to fund the permanent fund dividend this year, we're going to have to put the money in here.
You suggest, Mr. Chairman, then we leave this open at this time?
Along with those expenses, yeah. Expensive operating.
Okay.